Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Thanks so much for being with us. We stream live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. We're rebroadcast on A2Zen.fm, and we are archived at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. So, as I say every week, lots of opportunities for you to gather the information that we are sharing with you, and we are very excited about our program today. Just a reminder that if you'd like to get in touch with us, we'd love to hear from you, and we'd love to get some emails from you as well. Richard at richarddugan.com is my email address, richard at richarddugan.com. Believe it or not, tell me your story at richarddugan.com or TMYS at richarddugan.com, and it'll get you to the same exact place. So, love to have you do that. And today we're going to sort of, it is sort of a continuation of a conversation and a topic that I have had over the last few years dealing with sound therapy, sound and music, and how these kinds of vibrations affect us and can change our lives, change our brain patterns, change our emotions, change our heart center. Well, we're still going to be dealing with vibrations, but we're going to be dealing with light vibrations today. Today, it's the art of healing art. My guest, and I'm going to have to ask you, Jacqueline, make sure that I pronounce your last name correctly. Is it Ripstein?
It's Ripstein.
Ripstein, Long I. Okay.
Yeah.
So Jacqueline Ripstein is joining us on the program. She's the author, the creator of this, the book that we're talking about, and the work that she, this incredible stuff that she's putting out, this beautiful art out of the book, The Art of Healing Art. And first of all, welcome to our program. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me over. It's a pleasure to inspire people's lives together, Richard.
I have to say that as I was flipping through the book, and I've had a chance to read a little bit of it, but the thing that is so striking to me, and it's part of, I'm sure, one of the first few questions that that is asked of you in various interviews, when I look at the three different images of the very same picture, if you will, under three different light conditions. One is natural light. The other is ultraviolet, and then the third is a combination of natural and ultraviolet. And the question is, how in the world did you come up with this mind-blowing, incredible concept? This is absolutely intriguing to me.
Thank you. Well, first of all, I love it because, as your show says, you know, tell me your story, and your story can be adapted to so many things and ways. And, you know, if I think that question to my life, it will go to my art, to my life, to the trial. So I'll tell you a little bit about it. I have been an artist, working as an artist for 38 years. I used to have the same agents and publisher in Paris of Salvador Dali. And I'm self-taught. I really never went to art school. And don't ask me why. It was like every time I tried, just life threw me out. And really at the beginning, what I wanted to do is be a vet or biologist. And I wanted to help save the orangutans and the elephants in Africa. So, you know, those were my intentions, and God's path was another one. So since I started painting, my technique, even though I was very young, and because I was self-taught, you know, it took me more to pick up techniques and things like that. But my technique was pretty rural at the beginning. I was using acrylics and you know, pastels. But my thematic was always very striking, very strong. You know, it was coming some, you know, like an older soul and deeper levels, you know, always. I was told in several of my shows, no, you're not Jacqueline, and I was like 18 and then 20, and, you know, yes, you know, you see young people that are old in their soul or vice versa. So I always had a very strong need to show human beings' realities from, you know, who we truly are. In 1983, I started saying to God, please, God, let me show people your light. Let me show people the divine within each of us. And let me find a technique that can show the invisible. You're talking of 1983. And people were laughing at me, Richard, like, you know, go to the street like the emperor. Why are you talking about invisibility? You know, it's like you're crazy. And yes, you know, it was cataloged as crazy. And even at that time, my agents really could not understand. They thought that I was getting into some funky technique. And eventually, I got a new technique in the world of art, which are oils. Oils had not been reinvented since the 1800s with the titanium, which is the last one that was invented. And mine are oils, but instead of earth pigments, they're crystals. So they have another kind of vibration. They're lighter. They have, you know, stronger emanation of vibration. So what happened is, I've always dedicated my brush to God, and before I start to paint and I put on a candle. And you know how the Bible says, ask and you shall find. And really, it's so true. I promise you, it's so true. The only thing we truly have to say is, thank you, God, and I make myself responsible for what you have given me. And, you know, the only thing that we really become is the middle point. I am the brush. I am not those paintings or the book. And everything in content, in the sense, is coming from the divinity, if you want to call it, from my soul, the divine within each of us, whatever name you want to give it. So it took me 3 years in my studio. It became like an alchemist studio. I was searching and testing and doing all kinds of tests until finally I was given this technique, and I patented in 1986 for the first time. So one of the things with this technique, like you were saying, it's not an ultraviolet, it's a black light, because ultraviolet has a warm vibration. You know, it's warm, and it can be bad for the human body, and black is cold. It's the same they use in the discotheques. So what happened is, once I started, you know, portraying some of the paintings, I understood that it's like showing a human being. Yes, I can see your body, but now what about your unconscious mind? So the visible is also, you know, the visible you're seeing within the art. When I put the invisible, right away, not only you see those divine beings and divine sources of the light of God, but you also have the unconscious mind waking up, which is amazing. And I'm really grateful for that. And you cannot imagine, in these many years I've worked with invisible vibrations, how much I've learned, how much I've encountered. You know, I myself, I'm sure if one day they test me, like the scientific people have tested my art, you know, probably they'll see that my own frequency changed by working so many hours within the invisible.
As I go through, and people can see this on your website as well, so it's not something that they have to wait to just to get the book, although I would encourage it, because even within the pages are some incredible things as well. And so we encourage people to check out your website as well, and the book, which again is entitled The Art of Healing Art, The Keys to Power and Awareness. And it is available at your website, The Art of Healing Art. com, and so we encourage you to check that out. You also do, you teach people how to do this, or I guess to express themselves in an artistic manner through webinars and workshops and so forth. We'll talk more about that in a little bit. But
Well, I also have it in Amazon and iTunes, but the what I'm teaching is not the technique itself, but mm-hmm. I'm giving workshops to people to ignite creativity and ignite, you know, those inner powers that we all contain,
right,
and that are so important to be awakened, especially in these times where vibrations are being heightened more and more and they're going quicker more and more. We have to get our bodies ready to lift ourselves into higher vibrations in order to be part of this era.
Now, I'm curious as to whether you have done any research into these various wavelengths that you're dealing in that help to create this magnificent art that you have created that has been created through you, through your hands, because we've had conversations with people on this program in the past when it comes to the issue of sound and the various sound vibrations and
uh-huh.
and the tones and whether you're oming or humming or chanting or whatever or other musical instruments and so forth. I'm wondering if the same that seems to be the case. It seems to be the same when we're then talking about the various wavelengths of light vibration.
Well, that's exactly what happens and what's so unique about this book, because this book, it not only has the knowledge and wisdom given to me through the pieces of art that tap into as portals into higher vibrations, but remember that color vibrations connect to our human energy system, interacting with the essence of our own healing. So you're talking about sounds. I always say, Richard, that there's two languages which really become one in the universe, which is vibrations. And the universe communicates through those.
Mm-hmm.
One is sounds and the other is colors.
Well, I don't know about you, and I've shared this on the program many times, I see letters and numbers in colors. And I have for as long as I can remember. And then when I start thinking about a calendar, the months of the year, each one of those months doesn't have a unique color, but it's because of the combinations of each of the letters that has a distinct color that that month takes on a particular hue, if you will. Hours on the clock, just a list of numbers to a million, if you wanted, would have the same flow of vibrational color. So when you're working in this with these colors, is this a whole situation where you're guided to create a particular image or work? Let's put it that way. You're guided to create a particular work and to use specific colors and hues and shadings and tones?
See, the beauty of this has taught me so much within the invisible again and the visible.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things, for example, let's say that through a moment of inspiration, it could be dreaming, talking in a theater, hearing a song. In that second that I get what you call inspiration, spirit, in that moment, I get a heightened, you know, just feeling that connects me. So if we are talking about the invisible image, most of the times I would do a sketch, I would prepare, I would do the candle, I would dedicate it to God. And then as I get near the painting and I take my brush, my eyes start flickering and I go in. And it could be hours and hours. So, but here you have something that is sketched and somehow I'm following. But with the invisible, I have been taught after a painting that I did years ago called The Healing of the Blind, where I was trying to impose an angel to a certain task and that was not the right angel. And I learned through that lesson never again to impose into the invisible. So with the invisible, I never do a sketch. I just let myself be guided, and what has to come down has to come down.
As I said, I've had an opportunity to look at these images and the ones that are available in the book in particular, and sometimes you just can't take your eyes off them. I like the way that the webmaster has created the one where it just keeps changing from one to another of the three basic images. And of course, if you were to adjust the violet light, the black light, in such a way with the natural light, you know, it brings out certain hues. The I am picture, for example, you can't see, and it looks like an angel or a fairy. I'm not sure which that is. That's an angel. You can't see it in the normal light. You can only see it with the black light. And then, of course, you have the mixture of a natural and black light, and you can see the outline. You can just make out the angel in the background. When you first came across this technique, did it surprise you? I mean, or was this expected as far as what you were told and what you were guided to do?
Can I tell you the truth? Every painting surprises me. You know, it's like I come back and I look at them and I go like, did I do it? You know, I was chosen to do the Virgin Mary for Medjugorje.
Mm-hmm.
And one day I worked 12 hours without even knowing it. You know, it was 11 o'clock, and then I look at my watch, it's 11, and I said, no, it can't be possible. No, I had been 12 hours waiting, you know, working.
Yeah.
And I come back and I don't believe I do it, Richard. It's just like, you know, unbelievable if you want to say it. I myself, as a little child, you know, I get excited about it. And yes, of course, when I started tapping into this invisible techniques and, you know, after I patented, you know, it was like, the more I would get into it, the more I would learn. And then, again, I learned that if I try to control or try to take any kind of control over those dimensions, there is no way. There is no way, you know. There is no way. See, you can control your emotions. Let's put it like this, like I say in the book. We can kind of, like, control our mind in the sense of saying, you know, if it's a horse that's racing, stop the thoughts or try to stop them or making them positive instead of negative. But there's no way you can control your soul.
Mm. No, not really. I any more than I can control the impressions, the intuition that comes in. It's one of those things that is just, it's quite remarkable. It's a far distant connection to what you're experiencing. When I first got into this business, in this broadcast business, and I would help people to produce programs, they would just bring me stuff. They would bring me the materials, and somehow miraculously it would fit into 30 minutes or a 1 hour, 60 minutes. Without any back timing, without any measurements, without any preparation in that regard. We just jumped in, we did it, and somehow it just all fit. And I've, you know, and that still happens today. And, you know, it's just remarkable. I'm curious as to the materials that you use. And when you are creating the black light image, you have to paint with black light? You cannot have natural light?
No, I have to have black light and again, you know, it's like it even takes me quicker into, I don't have to call it a meditational state, you know, which is where we are. And exactly what you said now, you know, when you're using your intuition, which is something I'm trying to help people to awaken again, because we are truly going to need it in this era. Mm-hmm. You know, we cannot live anymore. And that's my mission, Richard, to bring down the invisible to our world, to bring down the awareness of it, to bring down the reality of who we are, because, you know, we cannot cover the sun with one finger. And I think we've been trying for eons of time, and a few have been separated, you know, through the knowledge in groups. And I think that it's about time that we all awaken to our reality. And when I say awaken, it's not only to say, yes, I'm a soul. It's about to leave that soul, to walk the walk, to through my actions and my thoughts, to know who I am. And that's my main purpose with my art, with my book, you know, with my being, as long as I'm here on Earth.
Tell us about your upbringing, both religiously and or spiritually, and where you grew up, and how you see that as having influenced or maybe helped to facilitate where you are today.
I grew up, you remember the TV show of the Crazy Addams?
Yes, the Addams Family?
I grew up in a very unusual family because my dad, you know, would take the boat and just take us, I'm from Mexico, and just take us in Acapulco to wherever. He would draw a map, and at night he would show me the, you know, the stars and say, you know, that's a spaceship. And, you know, I would hear this since I was very little. But most of all, when I was four, I used to have a wand that my dad did for me with the Reynolds wrap, which for me, it was real. You know, it was the most real wand I've ever had. And I used to sing and dance, bibidi-babidi-boo, just knowing that I could transform things and change things. And it was just amazing. It was like seeing life as magical. And then eventually, as my dad said to me years later, I changed the wand for my brush. And it turned into magic as well. But I grew up in a very unusual family, Jewish, but really not attached to religious in the sense of more spirituality. And I never heard, you know, in my home anything against any other religion. I used to go with my nanny to church all the time with her. So it was something that was really natural for me. So by the time they commissioned me the Virgin Mary for Bosnia, the Medjugorje, it was natural for me. It was not something, you know, beyond. And as an artist, I have it very clear. And my clarity is that I work for God and I serve humanity.
Well, I think that we're all working in that same general direction to work for God and humanity. And it's our desire here on this program, of course, to present, as we say, new paradigms for a new world. We're looking for those new ways of living, those ways that truly do serve us all, not just the individual, but everyone. I find it fascinating that there are so many who still feel that there are some that aren't deserving of certain things. I've talked with people who, some who say that not everybody should have equal access to, for example, an education. And because, and this is the word that's used, that there are some people that are just stupid. And I just don't believe that. I think that we all are on the same journey. We all have the same capacities, but we all have to learn, as you are teaching people, as you just said earlier, you're trying to teach people how to reconnect with their intuition. It doesn't mean that they don't have intuition. It doesn't mean that they aren't capable of connecting with their intuition. It's just that they have never been taught.
Yeah, and that's the beauty of art. You know, they say that an image is worth a thousand words, right? And even in the book, if you just see the image of the book, it's going to talk to you. It's going to take you to a different level of inspiration, which is what we want. Mm-hmm. And then when you read, you would be open to flow with that knowledge that it's giving you. But the moment people are creating, you're uniting people from a higher level. That's, you know, I've been working in the UN, well, representing the International Association of Educators for World Peace. Mm. And I've been giving proposals worldwide for 13 years now. And my proposal is to use the arts as an instrument for world peace. I truly believe that the only way for us to create peace is when we, each of us, gains that momentum, that space of peace, and we each separate an octave above from where war is created. And here comes the Einstein theory. A problem cannot be solved from the level where it was created. You need to go an octave above. And this is where I based my theory. So that octave are the creative forces, the arts. If we move above one octave of war, what would you find? Unity, peace, compassion, harmony. And that's where human beings can unite in a different way. I just gave a lecture this Saturday, and one of the things I said is, when you are creating, let's say you're dancing or you're singing or you're painting or you're doing, you know, writing or your show, you're touching a level of inspiration and peace that there's no way somebody will come at that point to be aggressive and that you will hook with them because you're in a higher level of vibration. Mm. And that's what people need to open themselves to, and that's the purpose of my book, to help people move from unenlightened to enlightened, to understand that colors, vibrations, arts, and, you know, there's so much out there to help us get rid of the baggage that we keep on carrying. We're so used to being in comfort zones with our darkness and our fears. In the book, I call it the chiaroscuro of life. You know, chiaroscuro is a technique of painting where you use the forces of light and darkness to show something, to show the light. One of the fathers of this was Rembrandt. Mm. But what he really wanted to show, and he said it in his diary before he died, is, I did not show people enough of what I wanted to show. I wanted to show them the light of God.
Mm. Well, I can honestly say that you are certainly sharing that and showing that to us, and we're going to continue talking with you. Jacqueline Ripstein is my guest, and her book is entitled The Art of Healing Arts, Keys to Peace, The Keys to Power and to awareness, the keys to power and to awareness. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. And we're going to be back in just a moment. Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. We're talking with the author of The Art of Healing Art, The Keys to Power and Awareness. And her name is Jacqueline Ripstein, and we are having a great conversation here on the program. And I am, again, so grateful that you have been able to take so much time to share with us here on the program. It's an area that a lot of folks are not really familiar with, only because they've kind of been pulled away from it, especially in the educational system. And that is the arts. I've said it many times that if it's necessary, and you would hope it never is necessary to cut things from the arts, from school, from your educational system. But if you're going to cut anything, cut the basics of math and reading and science and so forth, because you're going to actually use those very tools that you can learn while you are being creative in the arts, whether it's music, whether it is painting or drawing or even in sports for that matter. You're going to be using math. You're going to be using language skills, especially in music. You're going to be learning about, I think in many cases, maybe even geometry, especially if you're drawing or painting various earthly scenes and those kinds of things, because you're going to have to learn about perspective, and you're going to have to learn about angles and all those different, and shading and all of those different things. So it seems to me like you have an entire educational toolbox wrapped right up in what you're doing, Jacqueline.
Yes, yes. You know, exactly like what you said, the arts contain, you know, everything you're talking about. They contain forms, they contain numbers, they contain colors, they contain... But one thing they contain that is something we usually don't think about is that the piece of art that you have in front of you is made of atoms. And those atoms are vibrating. And there's several ways of how those atoms vibrate. And the same with a book. When a book comes from higher knowledge, it's vibrating at a very high level, you know, of knowledge. It transmits to the soul more than to the left brain, to the mind. So one of the things that, say, an artist is painting and he's in deep pain, emotional pain, what he's going to impact, part of those atoms, well, let's call it the DNA of that painting, will contain low emotional feelings, which the viewer later on, without knowing, in their unconscious mind, will pick up. I don't know if it's happened to you, and usually we don't get a word. You have two things happening. You can see a piece of art that's sad, that's war or whatever, and it impacts you and it depresses you.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can go to see the 16th Chapel, and you come out saying, "Oh my God!" And at that point, you're not even hungry. You're in a higher level of inspiration. It filled up your soul. It nurtured your soul. And that's what I've been, you know, trying to convey for years. Art is not to decorate the sofa. We have done that now in this era, you know, to decorate the sofa. In the Renaissance time, they would build a home for that piece of art. Art is to nourish our souls. It's a silent language that talks from one heart to another heart. It's vibrating. It's alive. It's atoms. And please be careful what you bring into your home, because it's polluting your mind if it's a low vibration, like low music, and it will heighten you if it comes from a divine source.
Yeah. Well, I've often encouraged people to be very, very aware of what I like to refer to as an individual's personal input. And that includes everything, not just what you eat and drink, but what you listen to, what you see, what you surround yourself with, because it all vibrates. It all has an impact. And to that end, I want to ask you about this art and some of the healing attributes. You've described the process, if you will, but tell me about some of the specific examples, because you have all kinds of academia that have been looking at this, and they're kind of in awe the fact that it actually works.
Yeah. I've got a few international scientists, and you know, and Dr. Valerie Hunt, which she just died this month, unfortunately. She was a professor emeritus from UCLA. she did a few tests with my art. In fact, she did some books, which two of them were the cover was the art. And she said, I'm not going to use anything but your art for my covers. But she knew and she studied the difference between low vibrational art and high vibrational art and how disseminations go through. I had the creator of the Biomeridian machine, Dr. Van Cook. He came to my house years ago and he wanted to meet me and he made some amazing tests. People would sit 5 minutes, he would do the test before they would sit in front of my art. And then 5 minutes, they would meditate with my art and go back to him. He would retest them with the Biomeridian machine. And the tests, which were unbelievable, the allergies started shifting into balancing states. The kidneys, the livers, the whole body. I was told this years ago, but I never had seen it the way I saw it when he was here at that time. And then about 3 years ago, I had Dr. Rafael Lopez Guerrero in Spain with Denmark scientists do tests with my art that were even, you know, more mind-opening, that were unbelievable. They tested for the first time how my art was emitting vibrations. And they made that, you know, the whole thing of the vibrations. You could see it in my website in www.jacquelinerepstein.com. Under art and science, you can see some of those tests. And it's amazing. For example, a painting that I called Heaven to Earth, that's the name of the painting, and he tested the vibrations that correspond to the universe that are in that painting are called From Heaven to Earth. Is that a coincidence or what is that?
That's extraordinary. There's no question about it.
Yeah.
We're tapping into some incredible things when we access our own intuition and we listen to that still small voice. You know, and I still catch myself from time to time because I'm a big proponent of if you're going to listen, follow. If you're not going to follow, then stop listening. You know, that doesn't mean the voice will go away either. You know, what's the point? It's like if you're going to take a trip, and I'd advise getting a map if you don't know where you're going. If you do, fine. But, you know, I haven't been everywhere on the planet, so I'd probably take a map. And if you're not going to use the map, then then don't bother. If you get lost, don't be concerned about it because you didn't take the map with you. So I think it's real important. And when you travel around the world, as you have, I'm sure, numerous times, obviously the majority response to your work is awe and astonishment. But have you received skepticism from some folks? Is that this isn't possible?
Yeah, it's great. I was invited by the government of China in the year 2012 to be part of, for the first time, a country celebrated peace through the arts. And I was invited by the government, and then I had a show in a museum. And when I put on the light, I cannot tell you how the Chinese people were going crazy for it, and the children, and they were, you know, I don't know how you say, oh my God, in Chinese, but it was like, you know, I could hear the expression, like, you know, very strongly. And then in December 2012, the background of the theater for the first Parliament of Spirituality in India was my blacklight image of Heaven to Earth. So, yes, you know, a lot of people, when it's exposed like that, they take it like, okay, this is it. But when they see the painting at the beginning, when they see it, I talk about the invisible. Like one time I came here to a university to give a talk to the boys and girls. You know, when they're 18, they're challenging you, right? So I came in and I saw all those eyes challenging me. And I said to them, well, I'm going to show you what you have never seen. And they look at me like, uh-huh, just show us, you know, that kind of, okay, show us. So as I showed them the invisible, what happens is that your left brain, by the way, switches to the right. And it doesn't matter if you believed in it or not. That switch goes on so quickly and taps into your right brain, and you're connected at that point to your soul, that people start crying. That's usually one of the first reactions with men, women, children. Children do not cry as much, but they get overexcited.
Mm-hmm.
So really what you're showing them, you know, I've always said that my art is a mirror of your soul, and that's what you begin to see. Today I had a friend saying, you know, yesterday I saw about the plane that is missing.
Mm-hmm.
She said to me, but after learning with your book and after learning through the invisible that you're showing us in the book and with the paintings, I was seeing these people going through the invisible into their souls and visualizing. I went like, that's what you saw? She said, yes. So it's obviously triggering people to do a quest within themselves, which is about time, Richard. In my shows, I always say, I'm going to ask you for forgiveness and not for permission. Because by the time it happens, it's too late to ask for permission.
Jacqueline, let me ask you, in regards to the work that that you do, your family, how do they feel about this? Do they look at this as a gift or, oh my gosh, here's mom and she's gone off the deep end kind of thing?
Yeah, I think that for a while they thought that. And, you know, one thing is that I do not think they understood me really from where I was coming, but the reality is I didn't understand it myself either. It took me really years. I just felt odd and different and not assimilated, and I felt that I wanted to be part of them, and I felt just, no, I am different. And then with my daughters, you know, my art was some kind of a competition in a way. And later, you know, they started kind of understanding it a little more and supporting me a little more. But it's always been like she was the weird of the family, you know? She's the one that talks about bibbidi-bobbidi-boo. And you know, for a while it bothered me. But then, you know, I learned to say to people, instead of my car, I park the broom. And then I would laugh at me, you know, not myself.
Yeah. Well, and of course, that's a very important lesson for each of us to learn. We need to learn how to laugh at ourselves so that the people that laugh at us, it doesn't hurt us in that same way, because we already don't take ourselves that seriously. I myself, the universe has found a very unique way of helping me in that regard, because early on in my career, if I ever started feeling a little too full of myself, the universe would create an experience that would give me my comeuppance. So I think I've kept a pretty tight rein on that in that regard, and trying to maintain the happiness, the joy, the fun in all of this. And it sounds to me like you've managed to do that too. I'm wondering, go ahead. No, I'll have you go ahead and elaborate on that.
Yeah, especially when you're not only doing something different, but opening a new path for humanity, which I always knew I was doing, Richard. And to be a pioneer in a field that's unknown is not easy.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I've given a lot of my time, my life, this book that you have, The Art of Healing Art, came from, you know, tell me my story, came from, I started not feeling well, and from one day to the other, they said to me I had a brain tumor. And then I couldn't talk. I could barely talk. I could barely function. And that lasted 3 years. But what happened is at the beginning, and after I went to the Mayo Clinic, University of Miami, and it was not fun, you know. I just could not talk. It was like the universe coming and shutting my mouth off. So I was angry. I was angry. I was denying the sickness. And I really could not believe I was shocked. And then when I gave in resistance to let in, you know, the gift that was given to me through that sickness, turning it around to say, okay, there's something behind here that's coming to me. At that point, I started getting in touch, like you said, with my intuition, with my inner child, and the whole book was dictated to me. So this is a book that totally was dictated to me.
Well, I'm glad that it was. I'm wondering if you have been able to categorize these different images, these different works, in terms of what areas of the visible and or the invisible part of us can they, will they heal? For example, the I am, the picture of the I am. What is there anything specific that its vibrations are attuned to heal within the human being, whether mind, body, or soul?
I love your question because that's exactly what the essence of the book is for. In the case of the I am, let me just read you a little chapter that's from the I am lesson from the painting that you like. And it says like this: this lesson guides us to the reunion with our total presence, to our true knowledge of who we are, and to our connection with our inner being. It is the connection with the cosmic consciousness of the I am. This lesson's intention is to remind us of and to restore within us the awareness of our original divine nature. As we realize this presence within us, we awaken to it. The mastery of life is to realize that within us is the divine being. Being exists in a state of peace and love. And then it just goes on and on about showing people how to connect to their inner being, how to connect to the I am, and how to move above, you know, and exactly like you were saying, how to heal their lives in order. But you know what? The amazing thing, Richard, is that even through this lesson, one of the things I learned, not only we need to heal our lives, our physical lives, our emotional lives, but we need to heal our inner child that's crying for us to be connected to it, and we don't do it. Mm. And we're not happy. The source of happiness is that inner being within us.
Mm. We're not happy. We have all of the tools at our disposal to heal those parts of us, and yet we still refuse not to. And it goes back to what you said earlier about being in our comfort zone. It's just too comfortable in the illness, in the dis-ease place. And we don't know, we're afraid of the unknown, so we don't go there.
Exactly, I was going to say that, exactly. You know, a lot of people tell me, I have fear of getting, you know, knowing things. I have fear of, you know, like getting to know, you know, what you're going to teach us. And I say, be fearful more of where you are now, because what you're going to learn will take you out of that fear.
Mm. So tell us a little bit more about where you your transformational phase, if you will. Was there a point in your life, and was it through this art, that that you came to become the person that you are today, or were you always, even as a child, curious and of a spiritual nature and wanting to help both serve God and humanity?
I think I always had that feeling, and of course, you know, like a diamond, like the lesson of the architect of his own destiny, which lesson two of the book says, you know, we all come in as carbons, you know, and from the carbon we find the diamond. And how do you find the diamond? Through another diamond. And then I met a lot of people who hit me enough, you know, for me to reflect more the light, because every person we attract to our lives has the mission of showing us something. If we're able to see that, so through my life, I've had a lot of ups, I've had a lot of downs, I've had, believe me, a lot of falls. And yes, you can see me crying and fall down, but up till now, you know, every fall, I've always stood up from it. And I learned that it's not about how we fall. It's about how we stand up again.
Well, that's extremely important to remember, because you know, we do tend to do that. What I find fascinating, and you bring to my mind the thought of a child, you know, even a toddler for that matter, who is just learning to walk, falls down a lot and cries a little, and then gets up again and starts it all over again, does not get stuck in the pain. And yet,
keeps on trying.
And keeps on trying. But we as adults, it fascinates me how, see, this pattern of unlearning that as we grew up, which is taught to us by the adults. So it's like, okay, I want to trace this back to the beginning. When did the first adult stop knowing that if you fall down, it's okay to cry a little bit, but don't get stuck, get back up again and do it again? When was the first adult just sitting on the ground crying and just didn't get up and then pass that on to their children, you know?
And it's so important, you know, what you're saying. In the book, I say that we have the potential to elevate ourselves to a heavenly existence or to fall into the deepest of hells. And what happens, Richard, is that we become so stressed, and then the storms of life, the tests of life, and the burdens of life, you know, we feel that we can't go anymore. Sometimes I've seen so much that one of the things as humanity that we're losing is hope. When you lose hope, you lose everything.
That's huge. Hope. And let's talk about that in relation to faith. Talk a little bit about the importance of even having faith. It's not that you have to be involved in any formal religion or anything. I mean, faith is quite honestly non-religious, you know. It seems to be more of a, we'll call it a spiritual trait.
But you know how I see faith and hope? I see it as a shining light, you know. As long as we have that little shining light within us, which is that hope and that faith, you know, we have something to look for and to move above. But when that light goes off, then we immerse ourselves into darkness. And one of the things I said this Saturday in the talk I gave was that be careful of the negative thoughts and negative feelings, because they reproduce like viruses. One will reproduce into hundreds. Like a virus,
yes.
And it becomes viral. And then you get other people contagious, you know. You sit down with them, and those thoughts come out, and they're programming somebody else's minds. And then we like the flu, you know, it's like you sat down with somebody that had the flu. Now you have that. Also, not only you got contagious by their energy, but also those thoughts are creating in my body, in my mind, an impact. And we don't realize that.
Yeah.
And all this I've learned through my art.
It seems almost as if we have to relearn a lot of stuff.
Well, exactly what you said, reprogram.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to get through this world sometimes. I mean, like I said, and someone said to me the other day, they were talking to me about the program and the things that we talk about and how, the work that we're doing here is great stuff and everything, but that I have to make sure that I am walking the talk. And it's like, well, that's great to say that I need to be walking the talk, but I'm just like everyone else. I have the same, I'll call them personality traits, to be kind to everyone. I had a therapist who referred to them as character flaws. But being in the human body, it's just the way that it is. I'm doing the best I can, just like everybody else. And I just hope I meet the same standard as everyone else in that regard. Because, you know, we all stumble and fall. And, yeah, we do get up and we keep going and so forth. But we still stumble, and it's like, don't hold that against me, you know, because we're all doing it. And as hard as we're working to serve God and to serve humanity, to be of service in that regard, I have to say that one of the phrases, I mean, this is the motto at the radio station that I work for here in Santa Barbara. We are here to serve, period. We are here to serve. And nobody walks through that door and asks us if we can do something and never gets a response of no. They always get, at the very least, give me some time to think about it and let's see what we can do. And maybe that's the perspective that a lot of us need to start taking in our own lives is, don't say no to experiences. Wait and just maybe, you know, take it slow if you need to and ease into it. And it seems to me like it's not that hard. It's pretty easy to just pick up a copy of your book, The Art of Healing Art, and start opening up the pages. And will the images that are on the pages of your book have the same impact as the actual originals that you created?
Great question. You know, not as the originals in the sense of, let's say you have a door, right? And then the originals are very strong portals, and but what happens is through the image, those vibrations are still part of the path, part of the portals, and they're still helping people. And one of the things that the book does is, as you read the book and as you see the pictures, you will start a state of recognition. You will start in your mind hearing, I know that. Yes, I know that. The one that's recognizing the knowledge is not the mind. It's the soul. And that's the one we want to awaken. That's the channel we want to open. And yes, you know, even the other day I had a show in a gallery, and the mugs that we were setting of my art, I turned around with the flashlight of the black light, I threw it into the mug, and the whole invisible lighted up, and I went like, oh my God, the invisible is trespassing matter.
Hmm. That transition in regards to understanding that, that nothing, we feel it, our tabletop, it seems real, but it isn't really. I mean, it's like, you talk about the visible and the invisible in your paintings, but it's the same with even this life, even with this existence, you know, that,
yeah.
You know, there's the visible world that we think we see, but it's the invisible world we can't see that is really real from everything that I've read in all the ancient wisdom teachings that we are trying to understand. And I think
this is exactly, yeah, you know, what I feel that I came to serve humanity for, to make people understand about the invisible world. And when I ask you, where are your thoughts, Richard, visible or invisible? What would you say?
I would have to say, oh, what are my thoughts?
Where are they?
Where are they? In terms of what are they focused on?
No, where are they, in the visible world? Can you see them? Or in the invisible world?
I would say that my thoughts are in the invisible world.
Exactly. Where are your feelings, visible or invisible?
Invisible.
So people think that they can manifest abundance by things from the outside, right, in the material world. Mm-hmm. The problem is, why can't we really manifest the lives that we really dream about and want to create? Is because we don't know from where we're manifesting them. We live 24/24 from the invisible world. It's from the invisible world that we're manifesting our lives, and in the material world, we're creating it. Hmm. You see the difference?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
So when we understand that, yeah, and we understand, and we really open ourselves to learn more about the invisible and go into that invisible within us, which is really understanding the source of where we are creating our lives, the thoughts, the feelings, the emotions, the soul, everything. That's the 1% of the 99 of the illusion. That 1% is the one that's creating our lives.
Yeah. And that's a very, and it's interesting, big things seem to come out of that very small package.
Yes.
Indeed. Before we wrap up our program, a few final questions for you. Who is Jacqueline Ripstein?
I love it. Because this Saturday I said, okay, you know, we say that this is who I am. I'm an artist. I'm a mom. I'm a teacher. I'm a lawyer. I'm a this. I'm a that. That's exactly who I'm not. Jacqueline Ripstein is just but a soul droplet, if you want to call it that way, because we are all droplets that belong to the same light, that I'm here to help unite the light of others.
Okay. What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
To help awaken people and help them see the divine within them, empower people, help them manifest the life they really have been, you know, dreaming for, and helping them be a peace source so we can create a world of peace.
Mm. And who inspires Jacqueline Ripstein?
Everybody. You know, it's like my children, their children, people, music, pieces of art, just being in touch with nature. The first thing I do when I wake up, I listen to the birds. And sometimes I wish, like Leonardo da Vinci, I could, you know, he had the green language, and that I could understand the green language, the language of nature, the language I could understand, the language of the birds. When I was in China and I was listening to the birds, my first thought, Richard, was they're not speaking English, they're not speaking Spanish, they're only singing to God. You know, they're not speaking mm-hmm. Chinese, they're singing to God. And if we would all wake up singing to God, can you imagine?
Mm. What a world it would be. What a wonderful world it would
and
be.
And if you want, I still want to be a dreamer, but, you know, that star of light, of hope and faith, I just ask God to never lose it.
Absolutely. Well, I don't think you will, but I will join you in that prayer as well. Absolutely. The book is entitled The Art of Healing Art, The Keys to Power and Awareness, and it is available both in Amazon and other locations, as well as the website, theartofhealingart.com. Jacqueline Ripstein, I want to thank you so much for your time and energy in sharing with us your story and the work that you're doing, this incredible art. And I encourage folks to pick up a copy of the book and have those images available. I just think it's quite extraordinary work, and what a creative concept. And we look forward to hearing from you again in the near future.
Oh, I look forward to hearing from you. It was such a pleasure, and you know, you're such a divine human being, and you know, the way you do the interviews is just awakened and inspired my soul. Thank you so much, Richard.
Well, thank you very much. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love, Talal.